All of the podcasts here at the Sideshow Network are now at the touch of a button on your iPhone and iPad. With the new Sideshow Network app, tune into all your favorite podcasts here at the Sideshow Network. Go to iTunes App Store, search for Sideshow Network, and download our free app to stream all of your favorite Sideshow Network podcasts at any time you want. The top comedians in the world are at your fingertips with the Sideshow Network app for iPhone and iPad.
Welcome to the first ever Innovation Crush.
Innovation Crush.
I have a weird echo, but I did not change my voice. My name is Chris Denson. Twitter.
I'm sorry, hold on.
Oh, yes.
What do you mean? What's that? What's the echo?
No. See? That was a joke. Because I said Innovation. Thank you, Sean.
I thought it was your ear.
I said Innovation Crush. Robert said Innovation Crush. And that was my echo joke. Now we have third degree.
You crushed it.
I crushed it.
Yeah.
Robert Donez Jr.
That's me.
My trusty steed. I'm going to ride you on this show.
Okay. It's inappropriate.
No, I'm sorry. So for those of you who are tuning in, Innovation Crush is the latest and greatest and best in innovation and marketing and products and just cool ideas and a lot of the cool people behind them. Sitting with us today is Charles Lee. Say hello, Charles.
What's up, guys?
Hey. Woo. All right. Do you want to echo as well? Do you
want to echo?
Thank you.
Woo.
Don't worry, Sean. We're okay. thank you for joining us today. How does it feel to be the first ever guest on Innovation Crush?
I'm getting a little bit stressed. I don't want to mess this up. You might lose some potential subscribers here.
Don't worry. I will mess it up for all of us. You may not get any more business after this interview. So I apologize. So tell us a little bit, just for introduction's sake, who is Charles Lee?
Well, the short version is, I guess my life mission would be to reduce the percentage of people who take their ideas to the grave. So the reason for my company, everything that I do, all revolves around that concept is there's so many ideas out there.
Yes.
But ultimately what really, you know, quote unquote, changes the world is the fact that you do something with it. Ideas are impotent without action. So
Robert is also impotent, by the way.
For many other reasons.
What?
I'll tell you later.
Okay.
That's awesome. And what would you say is you as an individual, or you as, you know, your company? Mm-hmm. We'll get into that in a second. But what is your personal brand? You know, how would you define?
Yeah, usually people connect me with the concept of idea making, which is this notion of taking a concept and implementing it well. So that's the area I studied philosophy in grad school and kind of mixed it with business and came out and wanted to help people take these like abstract thoughts and make a reality, whether it's a product, service, brand, those kinds of things.
How well do philosophy and business mix?
You know, that's what my parents ask.
Because they were paying for it?
Exactly.
They're like, wait a second.
They're entrepreneurs, longtime entrepreneurs. And the reality is, like, I think good business requires good thinking, clear thinking. And so a lot of people make a lot of mistakes in taking a concept and skipping a few steps and thoughts.
Yeah.
And trying to kind of wing it or trying to implement.
We'll figure it out.
Exactly. So I want to help people bridge some of those gaps.
Nice. So your company is called Ideation.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of iterations of ideation. Tough phrase to get out. Iterations of ideation. Ideation is, I was thinking about this earlier, it's one of those words that some people have never heard of in their life. Like, it's a what? Matter of fact, on like spell check, it gives you the red underlines.
That's right.
So does copywriting, by the way.
Really?
Which is really weird. Unless I keep spelling it wrong. But there's certain words that computers just do not know.
Should we get Siri?
Siri
on the podcast.
How do you spell it? It just blows up.
Okay.
So when you go into a room, how do you explain that as a service, right? How do you explain ideation as a service? And you've also got, you know, books and a conference and so on and so forth. So
So basically, the word ideation is really describing the process of idea implementation, idea development, or making. So it's not just having an idea. I like that word because it describes the process in which you take an idea.
You're getting Robert hot, by the way. That's why his jacket's coming off.
Yeah. Pretty soon the shirt's going to come off.
I'm next. And it's
gonna
be,
what's this like? Shirts coming off, impotent. What's going on here, man?
Hey, man, we have an innovation crush on you.
We do.
That's awesome. So I forget what we were talking about. Oh, ideation. Yeah.
Yes.
So basically what our company does is our little tag is we make good ideas remarkable or worth making a remark about. In this over-concentrated white noise kind of world of marketing, I think what really cuts through all of the sometimes the crap that's out there is that when person A tells person B about something and makes a remark about it, it cuts through everything. And so we like to create products and services and help companies kind of scale in their business design and really coming to terms with who they are and how to best leverage who they are for what they want to do.
Right.
And then allow them to scale with a consistent brand, the brand that's ever growing with the company. So that's what we do is we show up and help people not only gain
invited, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Not only brand clarity, but also figuring out how do you integrate the brand within the culture of a company as well as its external engagements with its customers.
So give us an example, because I mean, it sounds like a big scope of work, right? Like to go in and be like, we're going to do everything for you guys.
Exactly.
But, you know, from what would be an example, you know, I don't know how many case studies you have that you can discuss, but we'd love to hear like in action.
Yeah. One would be is we have one of our clients and they've given me permission to kind of share a little bit of their story is a company called Case Crown. They make cases and they've been a top seller on Amazon for a lot of different case categories for phones and tablets and so forth. And we went in and they started young startup. They quickly grew to 50 employees. They were one of the top ranked and they're pretty successful for a startup.
Right.
But what they had realized in the process is they had not created a great, healthy, necessarily a culture. And with the case, they really wanted to see what the possibilities would be of refocusing the brand where it would have a strong, like a social good element to their identity. So we came in and we just finished like an 18-month process of actually walking them through. We did everything from brand clarity to also tweaking their business design. So we figured out, you know, exactly how they were going to approach the public.
Right.
With their new brand of being socially conscious. And so we kind of walked them through different elements of it. And they used this really to manage even some of their outside vendors. Huh. So there's this notion like that came up about, I don't know, it was like maybe 6-7 years ago by people like Marty Neumeier, who wrote the book, The Brand Gap, where he talks about a chief brand officer, you know, somebody who can understand strategy business-wise, but has backgrounds in marketing, advertisement, those kinds of things, where these are now becoming C-level positions where you manage the brand, both the internal brand as well as how the brand engages outside vendors. So they used us to like even manage projects like redesigning their office space. I mean, we didn't do it, but we knew their brand and we kind of curated and also made sure that whatever was done by outside vendors were done well.
Well, it's so important. I mean, when you say that, because when you look at brand, right, you know, so many companies are good at making a product, but they're not good at making a brand. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always find that the difference is sort of the brand is what gives you direction. Right. Like we are this. We have clearly defined ourselves. We've defined ourselves not only internally, but to the world where a lot of entities will go. You know, you start grabbing at other opportunities that may not fit the brand because they sound like good opportunities.
Yeah.
And it's funneling and getting into like, okay, this is what we stand for. These are the organizations that we can align with or vendors or, you know, other people. And, you know, so it sounds like ideation goes in and defines that culture and how it lives in other means.
Yeah. And if we're really successful, ultimately, we want to be out of there.
Right.
Is that I think in an ideal scenario, you create either a point person or a point team to start managing some of these brand related elements. So we do that. And brand is tricky because, I mean, at the end of the day, the brand sits in the minds of your customers.
Right.
So it's not what you say it is. It's actually what they say it is.
Yep.
But you can navigate and maybe facilitate an environment where your customers will be more prone to think a certain way. But you can't force them. which is the world we live in now.
Well, you can't force behavior, right? Like, yeah. It's a lot of people go like, oh, we're going to get them to do X, Y, and Z. And yeah. You're like, no, you're not. Exactly. Like, you're going to do what they do in your way, you know, in a way that's relevant to those individuals. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of disappointed because I didn't get to do my just in case joke. I had one in my head. When you're like, I work with cases. I wanted to do a, well, just in case. But I didn't even think it through. So you kind of saved me. So there is also, you know, another prong of you is this ideation conference.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that. I got a chance to go. I think, I don't know, maybe it was the second or third one you did.
Yeah, it was a lot.
Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, ideation conference was something I started a few years ago. It was more of a side passion. I had worked in a couple of nonprofit organizations prior to starting ideation. And there was this kind of this disconnect between where I saw like businesses doing good and nonprofits doing good. And the reality is a lot of great companies do a whole lot of good in our world. They usually don't get the press. For example, like, you know, one case scenario is like a major bank here in Southern California, a national bank. You would know them. They would write a check to, like, say, the Boys and Girls Club for like $300,000.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But no one would ever hear about it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And
why
they would.
Is it?
Yeah. Why is it there's this disconnect? And it's not just the PR deficiency, but, and they would want to do good, but all companies would normally do is they would give money.
Right.
And then you have all these innovative nonprofits trying to figure stuff out. And yet, you know, there are some areas where they lacked business acumen. So I created an ideation conference that brings together leading brands as well as leading organizations to share best practices.
Right.
I think nonprofits can learn a lot about business through leading brands and businesses. Yeah. And I think brands can learn a lot about how do you move people to do something they're passionate about. Because I think
and not by gunpoint.
Yeah. that could.
It could work.
Yeah. but the idea is like how does a brand move their customers, and it's not just about like cause marketing, but for me it's like cause integration.
Right.
How do you get them to a place where, you know, you actually your services and products actually betters our world? And quite honestly, a lot of products it may, of course, it's like bottom line driven.
Yeah.
Still produce make our lives more comfortable, you know, there's a lot of value add to culture that happens with brands. So it's a conference that brings those worlds together.
So give us some examples. I think when I was there was was it Esther Havens? Is that
something?
She's a really awesome photographer.
Yeah.
And has been all over the world and kind of doing cause related photography, but really beautiful stuff. There was someone from Tom's Shoes at one, and I think it was right after they unboxed their sunglasses like that year. I'm doing your interview for you, but give us some
so
other examples.
I know,
exactly. And there's Emile, and you know, there's tap dancing, and we dug somebody up from the grave.
Yeah.
No, but I just just to kind of put it out there, like it's really exciting to get thinkers in a room talking about what they think about and what they do.
Yeah. So we've had folks like, for example, this past year in Chicago, we had, the executive director of Google.org. She was there talking about what kind of organizations they like to work with on behalf of Google. We've had folks from the White House there talking about what small businesses mean to creating change in community. We've had like Scott Harrison of Charity Water come in and talk about his story because they've done a phenomenal job of, in the world of charity, rebranding charity.
Right.
And
well, that's actually a really important point because, even how you started the conversation off, it's like CSR has kind of become cool, you know?
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? You know, is it because are their actions more visible via social media and, digital platforms and like, oh, well, they just spilled a bunch of oil. Like, oh, well, you know what? We also pet babies. why do you think that's kind of like blown up as sort of a focus?
Yeah, I think like corporate social responsibility, I think customers, I think just kind of the overall like social consciousness of people, especially, it's literally around the world, but specifically in the U.S. has definitely risen where people grow up knowing that they have a platform to talk about companies they love and why.
Right.
Now, whether or not I got to say good companies anyway, have done a lot towards good throughout history. So I don't want to make it sound like, companies before this whole CSR didn't do anything.
Well, yeah, no, I just think publicly, right? Like, you know, like you said, they used to write a check to, which is great, give them $300,000, but, you know, but now they're active participants, which is, I think that's a slightly different skew on the same thing.
Yeah. I think what happens, like, for example, inside of a company, you have the often like the philanthropic, the philanthropy wing, and then you have the marketing wing, right?
Yeah.
And those two wings have traditionally been really siloed. For example, a good example of this was Toyota. They had the 100 Cars for Good campaign where they picked 100 organizations to give a vehicle to. And in the process, they helped them with social media. They helped them with, you know, how to think about marketing. And the Toyota had a hard time. I met with the director of that, you know, about 2 years ago. And what he was talking about was, he's like, the company didn't know where to put this effort in. Is it a marketing effort to kind of improve the brand?
Right.
Or, you know, or does it fit in philanthropy?
Right.
And the tension has always been there, but now, and that's why I think people are starting to create, like, what does corporate social responsibility look like?
Right.
Because sometimes, you know, not every company, but often when it ends up in philanthropy, it takes a long time to get things approved and moving and putting dollars behind it. And appropriately so, because there's a vetting system towards where you give philanthropically.
Yeah.
On the flip side, marketing dollars are easier to access sometimes. And I feel like corporate social responsibility kind of could sit in between.
Yep.
And they're trying to navigate what this means for the brand, what this means for their philanthropy. And so it's a new reality, but I think it's blowing up because people are going, man, I can find out because of things like Google and other.
Well, how do you how do these brands pick causes that relate to them? Right? Like, because, I mean, there are thousands upon thousands of needs.
Yeah.
Right. And then, you know, is it the CEO's personal thing that he cares about that maybe doesn't even match the brand principles at all, or are brand principles even important here?
I think the smart companies are saying that they probably want to stay close to what's core, their core competency. So Toyota giving away cars makes sense. Right. Them giving away iPads may not make sense.
Right. Everybody gives away iPads.
Right. You know? So I
can win one right now if I just log on to some weird website.
So you could pick, you know, you could pick, and I think that people are getting smarter. It's like you can't give, like, even like large companies like P&G, they have this long-standing relationship with United Way. That's like their charity.
Right.
So I think for a lot of companies, whether it's out of convenience, because maybe you have 1,000 requests.
Right.
But I think companies, they probably, advice to most companies is, like, find some organization that naturally fits your core competency that you can deliver not only cash and donations, but also, you know, goods and services.
Well, the Denson Foundation is a good one. Right? You do a lot of really, really cool things. So you're also an author. What is your book entitled? What's it about?
Yeah.
I've never read it. I know, because I know you. I know that
how
you wrote it.
How dare you?
Oh, I'm being honest. This is an honesty show. Us a little. Actually, Robert was the one who didn't read it.
I read it. I actually did. I wrote the Spark Notes on it. So.
Well, it's around idea surprise. It's called Good Idea, Now What?
Right.
And it's all about taking an idea into implementation. And I wrote it for busy people like yourselves. It's written in 40 short ADD chapters.
Oh, nice.
You know, and it's the idea, like, for
are
some
there
of
pictures?
Us, there's some like charts and stuff. But it's written for people who, like, for me, like, there are books that I if I have time, I'll sit down and enjoy. But sometimes I'm like, man, give me the Cliff Notes. Remember Cliff Notes in school?
Yep.
Like, give me that version of a book.
Yeah.
And so what I did was, instead of having, you know, sometimes you don't need 5 stories to get the point.
Right.
Like, so a lot of chapters are really, you could read it 5 to 10 minutes.
Those are like Malcolm Gladwell books. Like, I'll pick up a Malcolm Gladwell book and I'm like, okay, I get it. Like, it's like the second, third page, you know, each chapter. And like, I don't need you to expound on this concept for another 400 pages.
Well, he's a great storyteller.
No, so. No offense. I think we're trying to book him on the
show. Hey, Malcolm, this
show.
Is Chris Benson.
I know, right?
But it's really written where there's like maybe one short story or half a story,
right?
Some bullet points on, hey, here's some real principles you can walk away with, and some advice on here's the next steps. So it's designed to keep people, like, keep moving. Like, it tricks you into, like, you read it and you go, man, I could do that,
right?
And you're already at the next chapter,
right?
And I could do that. So it's. It's a pretty sneaky little book.
It's like baby steps. It's like, oh, I didn't. How did I get over here?
Yeah.
How is the book doing? Like, and I know last time we talked, it was doing pretty well.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, more and more. I mean, books have this cycle of life where randomly I'll get emails from like either companies or organizations like, hey, our team just went through it, or, and it's starting to, you know, it continues to gain momentum, and it really like hit and miss, like randomly, you know, somebody will order, you know, several hundred copies or
your,
something like that.
Your internal process, right? Like you're running a company. Yeah. How big is Ideation now?
It's still relatively small.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're running a company, you've got, you know, pretty sizable clients and things that you're doing. You've got the Ideation conference that happens yearly. How in all that do you like, oh, I'm going to sit down and write a book? And, you know, and how does that come to?
You know, I've always been a believer that you're going to make time for things you value. And for me, that was a project that, you know, I thought I had all these thoughts in my mind. I've been blogging for years about ideas and I thought I could bring it together.
Right.
So literally that book wouldn't have happened if, one, I didn't have a publisher that was interested. So they approached, you know, Wiley's really reputable in business books and they came and said, hey, we want you to write a book. And then I gave myself a deadline and I said, what can I really push out? And I just kind of, you know, one of the things I talk about in the book itself is it's better to launch with like 80% than to have 95 and never launch.
Right.
That's true.
You know,
that's
some people sit on it. They're almost there. The book's almost done. So I said, forget it. And I love writing. So that was an added bonus. But I said, I can give myself 3 months and I'm going to finish it.
Did it blow your mind that your book was an exercise in your own principles?
Yep.
It's blown my mind.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I guess I should do it too.
Yep.
So kind of just on the general marketing side, right? Yeah. Like what are some of the trends that you see that, you know, that are out there and you're like that, you know, either someone that's executed something awesome or just an awesome trend that you see and you like?
I mean, what I love is so many established companies are going through rebrands. I think it provides a lot. When you see like companies like Ernst & Young,
right,
the YMCA, the Girl Scouts. I don't know if you've seen a rebrand. Girl Scouts.
I have an 8-year-old who is a Girl Scout.
Okay.
And yes, I don't know what it was before she joined the Girl Scouts.
Well, they did little things like if you look at the Girl Scout, like say their logo with three, you know, shadows of the girls there.
Right.
They did little things like they made their lips perkier, their noses sharper.
Really?
And if you look at their ads, they're more like teen magazine ads now than they once were.
Right.
And in some essence, they're trying to recapture kind of this like it's cool to be a Girl Scout.
Right.
And so they kind of went through this rebrand. But, you know, overall, it's encouraging that even like established organizations are recognizing that, you know, the reason that customers and donors, if you're running a nonprofit, are connecting is because of lifestyle. Like one example is if you're going down a supermarket and you see like, say, a row of peanut butter or something like that.
Peanut butter.
That sounds good, huh? Mm-hmm. It sounds even better with a deep voice.
Well, I'm hungry too. I know you saw me eating when you walked in. I'm like, I'm still hungry. This whole time I've been thinking about my food and it's out there. So.
That's awesome. Thanks for acting like you're paying attention.
I'm doing a pretty good job though, right? Peanut butter.
But the reason people are gravitate a particular package of peanut butter is packaging. They're not even reading content. So the idea is that I think the quicker people feel like your brand can resonate with my lifestyle or at least the lifestyle I want,
right,
there's a capture there. And a lot of that has to do with visual design and those kinds of things.
Right.
But visual design only makes sense if you have something deeper that is connected to it. And you.
Well, I was going to say, because I think a lot of it also is authenticity, right?
Yeah.
Like, especially with the transparency of information nowadays, and people can find out anything at any given time. It's like, look at McDonald's and the pressure they've been under, you know, let's call it the last 8 to 10 years or whatever, to improve their products and improve what they put out in the marketplace and do a better job. Yes, McDonald's is fun, you know, and it sounds like great to go play in the balls, which, you know, I was doing earlier this week. And they kicked me out. But
were you guys at it together or what?
I was waiting for Robert. He was supposed to come pick me up. And then, you know,
I was eating without him. Sorry.
No, but you know, or same thing with the peanut butter example, right?
Yeah.
Yes, the brand looks cool, but I think a lot more people, and I could be wrong about this, like they are reading the ingredients, they are paying attention, because I have a computer in front of me that I can look up the facts on anything at any given time, or receive information that I didn't even ask for about a particular product. So, I mean, you're right. Just the visual design is one thing, but it's also like, how does it resonate with the brand at its core?
Yeah, because you can have really cool packaging and you may gain their interest and get them to the next step of looking at it a little bit closer, next step. And they may read the contents and go, oh, crap, it's like twice the saturated fat of the other brand.
Right.
And so they may reject it at that point. So it's kind of a give and take. Like you have this external sense of like, I can have immediate like brand. Like it's like when you're walking in a mall and you walk by a clothing store, just the external brand. But once you go in and if there's a deeper story and how it fits into your lifestyle and so forth, then you have somebody, right? So it kind of is both and. And so that's a flip side. The other side of like brand that's, I think, a negative trend is brand is becoming such a common word.
Right.
And people are still associating it with just like cool design.
Exactly.
And I think that's where it gets kind of dangerous. Where like, yeah, I built my brand and it's like, it's totally inconsistent. Your employees don't like working here.
Exactly. Well, yeah. It's funny when I'm in conversations, I talk about everything as experiences, right? They're going to experience the visual sensation of that product. They're going to experience you, you know, if they go to some experiential event you've put together, they're going to experience you on Facebook. And, you know, how are these experiences relevant to me? So I think that's a great point. Are there any trends that you see that are like, that's horrible? Like what, you know, that any things that you see that you are not innovation crushing on?
Just still using, you know, old advertisement techniques of just blasting people.
Right.
And just doing it on social media.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Just like the talking head kind of syndrome. Yeah. It's just like, oh, we're just going to keep making noise. Hello.
And yeah. Come to our thing. Come do this. We're so awesome. You should just join us, like us, follow us.
Why do people think that works, though? Because you'll find a lot of, you know, whether it's celebrities, brands, record, you name it, like there are a lot of talking heads out there that don't, you know, they don't get it.
Yeah. It's generally people who don't understand marketing, I think. I think it's generally people who there's a difference between like marketing and advertisement, right?
Right.
Advertisement is this kind of often could be unidirectional sending of information, but marketing is really capturing what your brand is.
Right.
And even finding the right people who are already waiting for your product.
Right.
And I think that's a cool thing about the internet and technology. If you use it well, you can find your customers.
Yeah.
So instead of that, it's just like, and so part of it's like, you know, lack of bandwidth. Or laziness at times, where it's like, hey, let's just schedule 20 tweets.
Right.
Or, you know, let's just keep blasting our people. And they forget, like, what it feels like to be on the other end. Like, they're constantly deleting emails to newsletters they're not reading.
Yeah.
They're constantly unfriending people that are blasting spam.
Yep.
And the hypocrisy is that they're doing the very thing they hate.
Right.
Exactly.
As far as, Robert, have you been to church lately?
I have.
Oh, when?
Last Sunday.
Did you go?
I did. Woo. Were you there?
What's your church called?
What's your church called?
Oasis.
Mine? No, I'm just kidding.
Church is chicken.
I go to St. Joseph.
Nice. This is a beautiful segue because I do know that Charles is a man of faith, and okay. I wanted to ask you a little bit about your background in that and how that translates into, you know, your day-to-day business operation.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I come from a faith background and I've been like so inspired by kind of the teachings and life of Jesus.
Right.
For me, it's kind of interesting. Like there's plenty of critics of Christianity, but very few people, you know, give a bad name towards Jesus.
Yes. And well, you read any book, right? Like Jesus is always referenced, whether you're reading Eckhart Tolle, you read Wayne Dyer, everyone quotes, you know, or just references the life of Jesus.
Yeah. And so like for me, I've tried to model my life in the sense of his ability to pay attention to people in front of him and his ability to engage and provide things that people actually needed, I think are a big part of just being alive. I mean, if my goal, as I said, I want to lower the percentage of people, you know, going to the grave with their ideas.
Right.
And it's just this idea that, like, every human being deserves dignity. Every human being, I think, deserves an opportunity to live out their dreams.
Right.
And from my worldview, I think God created us to experience life that way. So the way that impacts is, you know, sometimes it's not always good business practice,
right?
You know, because there are ethical dilemmas that I face in whether sales or delivering products or things like that. But I feel like following someone like Jesus reminds me of just kind of staying grounded.
Yeah.
So like in my book, at the end of the book, I asked two questions. And regardless of your faith or where you come from, the two questions was, the first one is, what matters most to you? So at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, and, you know, whether you're buried in a beautiful cemetery or you're cremated and thrown into the ocean, it's like, what matters most to you? And my encouragement to people is, whether that's your career, your family, whatever, invest in things that matter every day. And the second thing is, what is enough? So, like, for example, right now, I have young kids. Mm-hmm. And they're very busy.
Right.
And so one of the reasons I started the company is I wanted to be able to manage my hours in a way where I know what I need right now to survive and do well. And I don't necessarily need to go above that desperately in any way so that I can do what matters most where right now is raising my kids. So it's kind of like, for me, my faith kind of grounds me and reminds me at the end of the day, if my faith is true, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, I ultimately answer to God, no other human being.
Right.
So if I'm standing before him, I want to be able to say with a clear conscience, I did what I thought mattered most to myself as well as to my faith.
That's great.
That's pretty. Along those lines, I mean, you mentioned sort of whether ethical dilemmas or even, you know, we're going to do an agency I worked with a while back. We're going to do something with the Boy Scouts and we're working on strategic partnerships. Yeah. And they had, you know, it's a faith-based organization mm-hmm. and they have very strict guidelines by which, you know, they choose partners and choose what they do and things like that. What have you ever run into any sort of opposition or, you know, like what kind of hurdles do you come across?
Yeah, I think for me, it's more of like an internal hurdle of, you know, I've definitely been in the consulting world for a while and I've seen a lot of consultants overpromise and underdeliver.
Right.
So it's very tempting in the midst of a sales engagement to say, we could do that.
Right.
But I've really caught myself and I've become better over the years of just saying, we probably can't do that.
Do you catch yourself before or after you cash the check?
See, that's the dilemma, right?
Right.
So now I mean, quite honestly, like I'm pretty confident that, you know, one, whatever room we walk into, whatever money a company spends on our company to help them, ROI is going to be greater than whatever they invest in us. And secondly, we're going to be honest up front to say, hey, here are the options. So there, you know, a lot of times when we deal with our clients, we say, hey, here's what you probably need to do. Whether or not you use us, you should be mindful of your choices and don't let anybody else rip you off or give you a false sense of hope or ridiculous pricing for things that they probably can't do themselves. So I think that kind of business honesty still, I mean, it's relatively gone in our favor.
Right.
And we tell them, hey, you could check out other agencies and firms and see what they do. We don't mind the quote unquote, the competition, but here's what we do well. And we know we can deliver, you know, beyond even what we say we're going to deliver.
I'm sure it also resonates in like the end product, right? If you're doing a campaign or you're doing something like what if it's for Coca-Cola, right? Yeah. It's going to resonate in their end product. So it's, you know, that good intention kind of goes through the whole process. Finish this phrase. It's an easy one. Don't worry.
Oh, man.
Innovation to me is.
Oh, great. Innovation to me is two things. One is the ability to clarify a problem, a real problem, and two, design a practical solution. I didn't know you were going to ask that, but I'm working on a second book around innovation.
Oh, nice.
And so those are the two parts, is the ability to actually clarify a problem, which is, I think, a skill set people need to develop. Mm-hmm. You don't just feel a problem out, but you can. There's some really great ways to think about problem solving. And the second part is design a solution that actually is needed. Like sometimes people build products or try to solve problems that don't really exist or people don't care about.
Right,
it's a great solution for something that nobody cares about.
A Twitter aggregator. We have one of those, and we don't need another one. No, you're right, though. Yeah. It's that's awesome. Robert, do you have any questions?
Favorite quote.
Favorite quote.
Yeah.
Off the top of my head right now, two quotes. One, I don't know word by word. One is by Mother Teresa. She talks about all these things like, you know, people will hurt you. People will do this to you. People will do this to you. Life is going to throw all of these curveballs. And she says, love them anyway. This notion that, you know, you have two choices. One of my friends actually advised me once, don't trust anybody.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't want to live life that way. I would rather trust people and get burned no matter how painful that is, because I want to still bank on humanity, you know? And then the other thing is, I think it was Ken Blanchard who says something along the effects of, you know, they say nice guys finish last.
Right.
But the reality is nice guys run a different race. So this notion that ultimately my measurement of success is different from what other people are measuring. And at the end of the day, like every day, I always ask myself, can I go to bed with a clear conscience that I did my best? I produced great work. I kept integrity through all of that. And if I could go to bed with a clear conscience, I know I'm going to be in a pretty good place.
Right.
So those are kind of, you know, guiding types of quotes.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Grizel, how are you doing back there?
You know, hanging out.
It's great. So I think that's it. I wanted to thank you for coming out. Do you have any questions for me? I'm not that interesting. Wow, cut it out. Go ahead, Robert.
Where can we get your book?
Oh yeah, of course.
You can just Google good idea, Charles Lee, and you can get it on Amazon, Barnes, almost every.
That's a pretty big deal to be able to Google my name and good idea and
dude, I have such a generic name like Charles Lee, but you can Google my name and I'll be one of the first to find. So
nice.
That's good SEO.
Yeah. That took years to build.
Yeah, I don't think I show up on anything. I don't even on Bing or nothing.
My name comes up before yours.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you Google Chris Denson, Robert Donez.
And for people who are really busy, there's a Audible. If you go to audible.com,
okay.
Look up Good Idea Now What. It's awesome. A Shakespearean actor reads the book. So.
Oh, really? To theme? Does he read it like?
I don't know. He has a really cool deep voice.
Nice.
Kind of like Chris's.
Yeah, kind of like Chris.
I wish I had read that book out loud for money. And then how can people get in touch with you? Twitter?
Yeah, just everything. Just Charles, the letter T, Lee.com or at Charles T. Lee. Once again, they could just Google Charles Lee and they should find something related to ideation.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us. This has been another exciting exciting Innovation Crush podcast. So thanks for tuning in, everybody.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny and I love you.